paying attention when my mom had explained it that morning, but the point was, they weren't home and wouldn't be back for a while.
"Should I be afraid?"
Cassidy asked warily as I led her up to my room.
"Is this going to be one of those messy boy bedrooms that smells like old cheese?"
"Definitely. I've got posters of girls in bikinis, too, and like a whole bedside drawer of lube."
"I would be disappointed if you didn't,"
Cassidy laughed. My room wasn't all that exciting, except for the fact that it contained a large bed. Mostly, it was just really clean. If it wasn't, my mom straightened up before the maid came on Tuesdays, which meant that she went through all of my stuff. I wasn't allowed to put posters up or anything like that, so there were a couple of framed prints, McEnroe and Fleming at Wimbledon, plus some sailing stuff my dad had liked, even though we never went sailing. I had a big bookshelf that held photographs from school dances, a couple of game consoles, and the empty space where my tennis trophies used to sit before I put them in a box in the closet. I opened the door, and Cooper pushed past us and jumped onto the bed, laying his head down on my Wii controller.
"Cooper, get out!" I said, laughing.
"Aw, poor dog."
Cassidy sat down on my bed and scratched him behind the ears.
"That's not helping," I said.
"Why do you have a framed picture of a sailboat?"
she asked. I shrugged and sat down next to her.
"Let me guess," Cassidy said. "Because someone else picked it out and put it up in a room meant to encapsulate who you are, even though you have no interest in boats."
"If I say yes, do I get to kiss you?"
"Not in front of the dog."
She pretended to be shocked.
"Cooper, get out," I said, prodding him.
Cooper sat up, considered it, and then promptly lay back down. Cassidy finally coaxed him off the bed and shooed him out the door.
"There," she said. "We have successfully sexiled your poodle."
Achievement unlocked. It was a phrase I'd picked up from our lunch table, and it made Cassidy smile. She bent down to take off her boots, and then padded barefoot around my room, examining it.
"Where are your books?"
she asked.
"Under the bed," I admitted sheepishly.
Cassidy got down on her hands and knees and peered under the bed.
"It's the Lost Library of Alexandria,"
she said dryly. "I don't get it, but okay."
"You should put them on your shelves, unless you're afraid the football team might come over and discover that you're a giant nerd."
"I haven't read many of them," I said, in case she thought that I had. They were my mom's in college.
"You're never going to read them if they're under your bed."
"I'll put on my new leather jacket and go read one in a coffee shop tomorrow," I promised, grinning.
"You're so full of it,"
Cassidy teased, scooting onto the bed. Her arms were goosebumped from the air conditioning, and her tank top was askew, revealing a lacy bra strap.
"Come here," I said, pulling her on top of me.
I'd forgotten to put on music to set the mood, but it didn't matter. For once, we had a huge bed all to ourselves, and a lock on the door, and an echoing empty house beyond that lock. I kissed her neck, slipping the straps of her tank top over her shoulders, and then kissed those, too. I pushed her tank top down around her waist, hoping she'd get the hint that I wanted her to take it off.
"Very subtle,"
she said, sitting up and wriggling out of her top. Stripes of late afternoon sunlight seeped through the blinds, creating golden bands across her skin.
"It's purple," I said stupidly, mesmerized by the appearance of her lacy bra and the soft curves of her waist.
And then Cooper let out a pitiful whine and scratched his paw against the door. Cassidy glanced over, and Cooper whined again, louder this time.
"Hush, Cooper,"
she called, but if anything, the mention of his name seemed to encourage him.
"Just ignore it," I told her.
And we tried to, for a while, but it's pretty hard to pretend your dog isn't sobbing his eyes out on the other side of the door.
"It's getting worse," Cassidy said, trying not to laugh. "Can't you do anything?"
"He's never like this,"
I grumbled, getting up. I stuck my head out the door. Cooper stared back at me, his brown eyes quivering. He let out an experimental whine.
"No," I told him. "Hush, Cooper. Go away."
"Not going to happen, old sport," his eyes seemed to say.
He lay down, settling his head on top of his paws, and whined softly. Better, I said, shutting the door with a sigh. Cassidy was sitting up on the bed in her bra and jeans, her hair tumbling over her shoulders.
So where's this drawer full of lube?
She joked.
We won't need it, I promised, and my T-shirt joined hers on the floor.
We started kissing again. Cassidy was on top, straddling me. Her hair swished against my cheek, and she bit my bottom lip a bit as we kissed, and I pretty much wanted to die. It was so sexy. I reached for her bra and waged a brief but unsuccessful battle against the clasp, managing to get it thoroughly stuck in the Velcro of my wrist brace. I said, we have a problem.
Did you, finish?
Cassidy asked awkwardly.
Nope, still good, I assured her. But I'm caught on your bra.
Caught was an understatement. My wrist was practically handcuffed to her back.
Oh.
Cassidy bit her lip.
Maybe I should... What if I... No, hold on, I'll pull it over my head.
This is so humiliating, I muttered as Cassidy wiggled out of her bra.
Well, it brings new meaning to the phrase booby trap,
she teased, and we both laughed, a situation made infinitely more interesting due to the fact that she was topless.
So, do you care where I put it? I asked.
What?
She spluttered.
Oh, wow, no, your bra,
I clarified, unsnagging it from my wrist brace. Sorry.
You're cute when you blush,
Cassidy grinned mischievously.
And since you asked, how about I show you exactly where to put it?
Cassidy slid down beneath the covers, and I tossed her bra onto the floor and closed my eyes and clenched my fists and let the delicious pressure of her warm, soft mouth take me back to our fireworks, all of them bursting at once. Later, after I'd returned the favor and we'd gotten dressed, and Cassidy had expressed her undying appreciation for the fact that I had an ensuite bathroom, after we'd let Cooper back into the room and were innocently playing Mario Kart with the door open in case my parents came home, Cassidy asked if I was a virgin. I paused the game since I had the A controller. I said, wondering if she had guessed.
Oh my God!
Cassidy's lips twitched as she held back a smile.
You're not!
Hey, I used to be cool.
I tried to make a joke of it.
I know, it's horrifying,
Cassidy said wryly, and then fiddled with the controller, realizing what she had started.
Well, I'm saving myself,
Cassidy announced, like it was the punchline to an untold joke, and then shrugged, embarrassed.
Why do they even call it that, saving yourself? Like we need to be rescued from sex? It's not as though virgins spend their whole lives engaged in the sacred ceremony of being saved from intercourse.
Just so long as you're cool with outer course, I guess I don't mind. I grinned.
What the heck is outer course?
Cassidy frowned. I tried to make myself the picture of innocence.
Well, I could show you again.
21. I'm not certain I can pinpoint the exact moment when I became irreparably different. These days, I think it wasn't a moment at all, but a process. A chemical reaction, if you will. I was no longer Ezra Faulkner, Golden Boy, and maybe I hadn't been for a while. But the more time I spent with Cassidy, the more I was okay with it. After Cassidy went home and my parents returned from their outing to various home decor warehouses, which we discussed at length over dinner, I put on my new leather jacket and looked at myself in the mirror. A real look, something I'd been avoiding for a long time. Ever since the accident, I'd only seen the things that were wrong. My hair grown out from its athlete's cut, my muscles diminished, my tan replaced by an unhealthy pallor, my formerly fitted jeans hanging off my hip bones, even with the aid of a belt. But when I looked in the mirror this time, I didn't see any of those things. They were still there, of course, but not as flaws, just as facts. Skinny, messy-haired, pale. Me, I guessed. Just a different version from the one most people remembered. In some sort of grand gesture, I took the books out from under my bed and put them on the shelves. Not that I was planning on reading many of them, but it was a nice feeling, being able to glance at my bookshelves and contemplate the possibility of it. To think that a small piece of my bedroom finally represented something of me. I wondered what Cassidy's bedroom looked like, if it encapsulated her in a way that mine didn't. I wondered if it was anything like Charlotte's bedroom had been, with ladybug figurines lining the windowsill and an entire desk just for her makeup collection, which apparently was called a vanity. "How come we never go over to your house?" I asked Cassidy when I picked her up for school on Monday.
"Because we have a housekeeper," she said, sighing, "and she'd tell my parents I have boys over when they're not around."
"Technically, I'm singular," I said, nodding at the security guard as we drove past.
"All the more disastrous," Cassidy assured me. "Trust me, it's easier if you don't come over. You're not missing anything."
"I guess," I said, sensing that Cassidy wanted to drop the subject. Cassidy took a sip of the coffee I'd brought.
"Have you ever tried a French press?" she asked. "I think you'd like it better."
Cassidy and I went out to the movies on Friday night, a real date, at the Prism Center. She wore a nice dress, and I wore my new clothes, and we saw this awful comedy starring the same actors who always star in awful comedies. Going to the movies always makes me strangely exhilarated when I exit the theater, surrounded by the smell of popcorn and everyone talking about the film. It's as though everything is more vivid, and the line between the probable and the cinematic becomes blurred. You think big thoughts, like maybe it's possible to move someplace exciting, or risk everything for a chance at your dreams or whatever, but then you never do. It's more the feeling that you could turn your life into a movie, if you wanted to. I've never been able to explain to anyone what's so holy about the moments after you exit a movie theater, so it surprised me when Cassidy smiled and said nothing until we reached the bottom of the escalator, leaving me to the perfect silence of my moment.
"It's creepy," she observed, slipping her hand into mine. "Overhearing 100 identical conversations."
"Then we'll be the one conversation that's different," I promised. "Tell me something that happened when you were a kid." Cassidy smiled, pleased.
"When I was 7, my best friend blew out the candles on my birthday cake. I cried because I thought my birthday wish wouldn't come true. Now you tell me something."
I said, thinking. "In the second grade, Toby and I borrowed a bunch of plastic jewelry from his little sister and buried it in his mother's flower bed. We wanted to dig up buried treasure, I guess, but we got in so much trouble. I had to sleep over in a different room, like the world's longest time out."
"I didn't realize you'd been friends for such a long time."
"Since kindergarten," I said. "Alphabetical order. We had to share a cubby and everything." A couple of guys from school interrupted us then to say hi. We stopped to chat about which movie we'd seen. It turned out to be the same one, and how it had sucked. By the time we got away, we passed half of the girls' water polo team hanging out by one of the fountains. They waved, and I nodded back. I didn't really have a big romantic evening planned, but neither of us wanted to head home, so I offered to show her the Castle Park. It's this great old playground with a huge concrete fortress built way back in the 80s, where I used to play when I was little. On the drive over, Cassidy discovered that I'd never tried a Toblerone bar, which she deemed totally unacceptable, so we stopped off at the grocery store to buy some. While we were waiting to pay, what might possibly have been the entire varsity football team crowded into the checkout line behind us. They were buying 2 dozen cans of non-stick cooking spray. It was so entirely magnificent that I was too stunned to laugh. Cassidy nudged me, grinning. "Hey," I said, turning around. Connor, the quarterback, seemed surprised to see me, although not as surprised as I was to see the entire starting lineup dropping what had to be a cool 50 on cooking spray. "Faulkner," he acknowledged, and then nodded at Cassidy. "Lady friend?" Connor was plastered, the stench of liquor radiating off him in waves. I hoped someone else was the designated driver.
"They make different flavors,"
Cassidy said politely, nodding toward the cooking spray.
"I don't know if you're aware."
I stifled a laugh. It was all too bizarre, and the worst of it was that the cashier was some kid from school, possibly a junior. He looked terrified at the prospect of ringing up the football team's purchase, and I didn't blame him.
"Got it, thanks,"
Connor said sheepishly, as though we'd caught him buying a bulk pack of tiny condoms. Honestly, that would have been less surprising. I paid quickly and ushered Cassidy into the parking lot, where we laughed our faces off.
What was that?
Cassidy asked, gasping. I'm not certain, I said, but I believe it may have been the starting lineup of our school's football team purchasing 24 cans of Pam.
Oh, my God, Cassidy spluttered. I'm dying.
We were still laughing when I pulled into the empty lot in the castle park.
Maybe it's some sort of ritual,
Cassidy said, speculating.
Like, they have to cover themselves with Pam and play tackle football.
Believe me, if that was going on, I'd know about it. The tennis guys would give football so much crap. As if we didn't already. We played a country club sport. They put on protective padding and slammed into each other.
Maybe they're pranking someone.
It's probably a drinking game. Pam shots with beer. We stared up at the enormous concrete castle, this bizarre combination sandbox and jungle gym with a tire swing I used to love as a kid. Cassidy held the candy and drinks we'd bought from the market. The plastic bag knotted around her wrist like a corsage.
So we just climb up?
She asked doubtfully, taking hold of the rock wall that led up the side of the fortress. I winced, realizing her doubt was focused in my direction. Well, there are stairs. I disappeared around the other side of the castle, trying to make a joke of it, of how I couldn't even handle a freaking jungle gym. We climbed the castle's lookout tower, the highest point of the playground, and it was sad how triumphant I felt at getting up there. A little plastic steering wheel was bolted to the balcony, which made Cassidy laugh.
It's like that castle from Monty Python, she said, taking the helm. Let's take it out for a spin.
I thought you didn't have a license, I teased, sitting down on the rubberized floor of our little fort. A full moon was shining high and white over the skeletons of the birch trees, and I could hear someone still on the tennis courts beyond the cookout area, even though it was nearly curfew. I wondered if it was anyone I knew. Cassidy sat down next to me, her dress teasing me as it fluttered in the breeze. She broke the chocolate bar in half and waited for me to taste it with this I-told-you-so grin. We finished the candy in an embarrassingly short time, and I watched as she absently licked the chocolate off her fingers. She blushed when she noticed my reaction.
I bet you taste like chocolate, Cassidy said.
I bet you're right, I told her, and then we were very busy in our private little turret, Cassidy sitting on my lap in her little dress, driving me crazy with her bare legs against my jeans. I was kissing her neck, and her hands were under my shirt, and I didn't know how far I was getting, but I didn't care, because the magnificent possibility of kissing Cassidy Thorpe had turned into an indisputable fact of my daily existence, and I could hardly believe my good fortune. I ran my hand up her thigh, half expecting her to push it away, but she didn't. Instead, she sat up as though we'd been caught by her dear, sweet grandmother, and for all I knew, we had.
Someone's here,
Cassidy said, smoothing her hair. She scooted over to the edge of the lookout and peered through the crenellations. I hoped desperately that she had imagined it, but then I heard laughter. Laughter and aerosol cans being shaken.
You're not going to believe this.
Cassidy motioned me over to take a look. The football team had arrived, their trucks and blazers lined up in the lot. With cans of cooking spray in hand, they advanced on the swing set and monkey bars.
Are you kidding me?
I whispered as they began to pam the monkey bars.
That's horrible,
Cassidy whispered back.
We should do something.
I'll handle it, I told her. After all, nothing kills the mood quicker than bearing witness to mass vandalism. They didn't notice me until I was right there, standing at the edge of the sandbox. I took out my car keys and hit the panic button, making everyone jump. Hey, I said, killing the alarm. Connor McCleary, get your drunk ass over here. Connor stumbled toward me, kicking up sand. He was barefoot, wearing his jersey with a pair of jean shorts, and he looked strangely vulnerable without shoes on. I'd known him since kindergarten, and what I was thinking about then wasn't how I was a cane-wielding member of my high school's debate team about to face off against the varsity quarterback, but how Connor had refused to put on his construction paper pilgrim hat during our kindergarten's Thanksgiving party. He'd thrown a tantrum over it until Ms. Lardner had picked him up and sat him on top of the cubby nook to calm down. He was the kid who'd refused to give fat girls Valentines, even though you were supposed to bring enough for everyone, who'd always forgotten part of his Cub Scout uniform, and who'd made dioramas on lined paper the morning.